Saxparin came, near as I can tell, in the 1880s wave of immigration from Russia and Poland. They settled in the Lower East Side in what was then a Jewish section. Tak's father was a tailor. I have never heard anyone say anything about his mother's having an occupation. If you like, I can show you the Tacna silver. Some of it is very valuable and beautiful, and I can't understand how these people who had no money at all got it. But anyway, they had it. Also, I assume that they could not have brought it with them, because it would have been stolen on the route. So I don't get it. But anyway, they had it. My brother probably still has a bunch of it because he took over all the belongings in their home in Baldwin without my being consulted by anyone. I should have been. That's part of another story. Anyway, Tak's father was a tailor. Tak ran around the Lower East Side, as did the young boys. He was smaller, but certainly not less muscular than the other boys who chased him. And his escape was to jump into the East River. I imagine that if he didn't know swimming before then, he learned it quickly there, because that's how he stayed alive. Somehow or other, he ended up in the best of the settlement houses. I'm not saying that he lived there. I have no idea where he lived. I would assume at home. During his childhood, but he ended up in the best of the settlement houses, and I have the name of the woman who ran it. She was the one who started the settlement houses and oversaw all of them. I cannot help thinking that she was the one who was responsible for his application. Well, high school. He went to something Dewey High School in Brooklyn. Brooklyn? Actually, I don't know where it was. I think in Brooklyn. And I think it was for the gifted. She would have arranged that, probably. I never thought about that before. And he must have done well there. She arranged his application to Columbia College, near as I can tell, and perhaps his acceptance. Anyway, he went to Columbia College and graduated, presumably with honors. Some of the photographs that I think I've already shown you, but you may not have understood what you were seeing, and if not, you will see more, were taken of during his period at Columbia College or his subsequent period at Columbia Law School. From Columbia College. Oh, Uncle I was recruited, presumably by the parents, to support Tak while he was in college. That created a lifelong rivalry between the two of them. Uncle I was the one who amassed a fortune. Tak was the one who became famous and distinguished. Why they could not make up and enjoy one another. I don't know. But I have heard that there's a history of rivalry among siblings on that side of the family for whatever reason. I don't know whether Tack graduated with honors from Columbia College but or Columbia Law School, but I wouldn't be surprised. In any case, you can check the records with both institutions, and they would know. It's in their libraries, but it goes way far back. We can probably pinpoint the dates. And I think Tack then had some kind of internship with a law firm whose name, as I recall, is somewhere in all the notes. A big one, or big for that day, anyway. Eventually, he went out on his own and was extremely successful. He incorporated most of, when I grew up, were the big department stores in New York, Gimbel, Saks, not Macy's, Stearns, Tiffany's. I know he incorporated Longines in the United States, though it's a Swiss company. And so all that was obviously profitable. How he got those assignments, I don't know. I would assume that these stores were much smaller then and run by Jews, but again, I don't know. He ended up represent or not ended up. He the next perhaps the next phase of his career, I don't really know, was representing a lot of insurance companies. That would account for why Mom wrote so much insurance legislation, which was passed. This would be while she was working for him after her graduation from law school. And I believe he represented insurance companies, and she would have done so either on her own or under his sponsorship. You probably will find in the records a lot of Mom's work on insurance law, and she became quite the expert in it. I don't know much about Tack's subsequent career, but I do know that he made a lot of money, as did many lawyers during the Depression, because so many people and businesses were in trouble and needed lawyers and paid whatever they paid. I have no idea how much. Anyway, what I do know is he was famous and prosperous by the time Mom graduated from law school in 1937. Now, he was famous not only as a lawyer, but as a speaker as well, an orator. And he was quite the speaker. So many asked him to give speeches, graduation speeches, you name it, all kinds of speeches. He became friendly with a man named John Haynes Holmes, whom you, if you haven't heard about him, you should probably research him. He was a very important religious figure. He founded the, I don't remember the name of it, but it was an independent church in New York, well attended by many people, not affiliated, I think, with any particular faith. He and Tack became close friends. Tack supported his church and may have been on its board. Over the years, Tack went on the board of many companies, some of which became large. And I have to assume that many were his clients. In those days, it was not frowned on for the lawyer representing the company to be on the board. Today, that's a no-no, and in some states, anyway, maybe all prohibited by law. One moment, please. Tack had a partner named Louis Pinkison. I can give you the spelling of the name if you need it. I believe he and Rose, when I was a child, they lived on Central Park South, which was not so fancy as it is today, but still, I didn't know that it was fancy. I was just a little kid. But they directly looked over the park. And we used to go there. Throughout my childhood, we visited with my grandparents almost every weekend, including after they moved to Baldwin.
Your grandparents? Okay, yeah. All right.
Rosenthal. We did not visit much with my father's family, and I have been told that he was ashamed of them. I don't know that's true, but eventually, after his mother died, my father took over responsibility for his mother's sister, who had been living with her in a house that I think my father probably bought for them in Brooklyn. And the mother was named Lena Bauman. I don't know her maiden name. Would love to, and would love to be able to know something of that side of the family. The mother was strict and tough, as so many Jewish mothers were in those days, seeing education as the way out for their children. She also saw to it that her children became musicians. So all three of them, she had three sons, all three of them became musicians. My father was a violinist. I learned only recently that, he was also quite a liar, so I learned only recently that his saying that he took violin lessons with Yehudi Menuhin was actually true. When I was a child, he would play the violin only occasionally for us, but what he played was the Mendelssohn It's a concerto. I have it here and can play it for you if you want, but it's considered by violinists the most difficult of many violin works, not just Mendelssohn's. And I wished that he would play more. I think by then he rehearsed so little that he probably did not feel comfortable playing, as I now do, the guitar. I was quite a guitarist when I was younger, but that's a different period. So anyway, Tack, to get back to Tack. When he decided to retire, he left his law firm either in the hands of my father or my father and Louis Pinkason. I don't know what the arrangement was. Pinkason, when I was a child, we called him Pink, and he and his wife were childhood, like almost like additional grandparents to us. We were then living on, I believe, West 84th Street, not far from the park, and would walk over to Rosentak's apartment and spend a lot of Sundays, perhaps Saturdays, there. I don't recall going to any services, except that I've just now realized when I was a child, I had a nanny. My brother and I had a nanny. We knew her as Wolfie. And my mother fired her in some acrimonious something, I don't know what. But she was Catholic, and there was a Catholic church across the street from our apartment. And I've wondered if somehow, being religious as she was, she managed to get us baptized, even though we were Jewish. Maybe that's why Mom fired her. I don't know how old Tack was when he retired. Oh, wait a moment. He and Ben Rosenblatt, who was his best friend in law school, and how he came to know the Rosenblatt family, I think it was Ben, who was the other one in this. They decided to take a walk to Philadelphia and back, and they did that. Tack loved handball, and somewhere in the photographs, maybe some of the ones I have online, there's at least one picture of him playing handball. He was very athletic, very muscular. He was short, I believe 5'7". Maybe not so short in those days, but short. And also very good looking. So, I don't know when he retired, but it seems that, he had terrible arthritis, but not so terrible in those days. Maybe he shifted from walking to swimming, because by the time he retired, he wanted to live next to the water, which is why they bought the house they did in Baldwin, Long Island. It was not a fancy neighborhood then. I think it is now. And my brother lives in the... My mother had the house redone for my brother and gave it to him as a gift. That's another story. In any case, tax swam daily, and I remember his boasting, or somebody's boasting, that he swam under the ice in winter. I believe that. He was an extraordinary swimmer and very strong. The house was right on the water. If there was flooding, there was a wall separating them from Long Island Sound. And by the way, you could see across the way to, I guess it's Jones Beach. So it wasn't a very long swim to the other side, though to Jones Beach it was somewhat longer. I remember doing that swim as a child, and to the other side was a nothing, particularly at low tide. The day, or whatever it was called, where their house, on which their house fronted, was full of clams. I think it's clams. And we often took a pail and were told to collect, my brother and I, and were told to collect clams, at least I think it's clams, for dinner. Which we did, and I don't know whether we ended up eating them or not, but anyway, that's what we were told. Tack served on the board of directors of virtually every synagogue and church in Baldwin and the area. For perhaps two reasons. He gave speeches at all of them, and perhaps they also needed a lawyer. And he just adored religion of any kind. He was also interested in becoming an ever better speaker, and enraged my mother, my grandmother, by becoming a follower of Billy Graham. She couldn't believe that he would follow anybody that biased, and particularly biased against Jews, but that's another story. And you asked about Reverend Coughlin. I think he was another one whom Tack followed.
Charles Coughlin?
Pardon?
You mean Charles Coughlin?
Telephone?
No, Charles Coughlin.
Maybe. I don't know. There was somebody besides Billy Graham, but Billy Graham came first.
One moment. First in tax estimation as a public speaker. He wasn't the least interested in Billy Graham's religion or that of the other speakers he followed. He was a Jew, never had any doubts about that. How observant he was, I haven't the faintest idea, but certainly not Orthodox. He must have known Hebrew. I have no idea what, if any, services they attended except for the ones they attended with my family. And so that was that. As I told you, oh, I have left out go way back in the story. When Tack was a child, he lived on the Lower East Side. At some point in his career, he acquired the three-story house in Far Rockaway. Whether he simply had the money for it or what, I don't know. He may have gotten it from a client who owed him money. I haven't the faintest idea. In any case, he moved there, but wait a minute. They moved first to Long Island, to White Plains, I'm sorry. And I have quite a lot of photographs in my online album taken in White Plains. And those include photographs of Mom and Sissy and many relatives from both sides of the family. You may be wondering where Uncle I fit into this, and the answer is not much. He and Tack had this ongoing rivalry. However stupid it was, they had it. And occasionally we would be taken to see Uncle I, who lived with Aunt Anna in a horrible little apartment, dirty, grungy, on the Upper West Side. And this was after he was a multimillionaire. Who knows why he chose to live that way? He was terrible to Anna. She had no money. She had no means of support. She had to do whatever he told her to. And she virtually never went out. I heard that she was pretty as a young woman, but I don't think she ever had. I don't think she was ever matched with anybody as a husband, and she served as maid to Uncle I. He was really cruel to her. I remember visiting his office. My father and Tack had an office at 110 William Street in New York. And my father practiced there for a long while, and so did my mother. I don't know when that was closed, but I think Uncle I was in the same building, but if not in the same neighborhood, you can probably find out. I remember being taken to his office. One of the things I couldn't stand about Uncle I was that he smoked cigars nonstop, and I thought they smelled horrible. He smelled horrible. As a child, I just wanted to be away from him. He used to pinch my cheek and it hurt. And there was no getting him to stop. My brother and I both found him repulsive. We wanted only to be away from him. If he had a good side, as apparently he did, we never saw it. We did not know him as a ladies' man. Apparently he was in Chicago, may have been in New York. He sang in the chorus of the Metropolitan Opera. I learned that only in the last 10, 20 years. I have no idea what romantic life, if any, he had in New York. In any case, to the best of my knowledge, he never married or fathered any children. So I don't know how far being a ladies' man went or really what that meant. But anyway, that's what I was told about him. And you've now heard. Oh, his office in Manhattan was tiny. He had a desk. There was a window. There was room only for him. And the whole place stank of cigar smoke. And it was dirty. We just wanted to be out of there and didn't like him. And that was the story. Okay. I told you that Rose started several businesses and tax shut them down as soon as they became profitable. So I've been told. I don't know what kinds of businesses they were, but they were considered okay for women. It may have been retail clothing, something of the sort. I don't know. I do know that she was furious at him over it. They always lived, and this was characteristic of the aristocracy anywhere. They had separate bedrooms. That was true in the apartment in New York and also in Baldwin. Hers was twice the size of his. He seemed content with that. I don't know anything about how it came about. But it was the norm for aristocrats of all faiths in Europe and for many in the United States. So there was nothing all that unusual about it. I need a break.
Okay.
I've had quite a temper. Rose was most certainly his match. There is a family saying in which, in the apartment in New York, which was several stories up, Tack once threw either the salt or the pepper shaker out the window into the courtyard below. The apartments were built around the courtyard. And Rose, like this, said, "Well, in that case, you won't need this," and threw the other shaker out. Another memory, I remember what their bedrooms looked like there, and somewhat the kitchen, somewhat the living room. I don't remember really the dining, whether they ate in the dining room, or I just don't remember. When I was a child, but not too much of one, given the story I'm about to tell. I remember going into Rose's dressing room, whatever it was, the piece of furniture that women had to put on their makeup and fix their appearance. I found a pair of manicure scissors, and I used to have a widow's peak, and I cut it off and it never grew back. Just a funny memory. And now I remember Tax taking us to the Museum of Natural History, which was right across the street.
That's about all I remember of that. I have many more memories of Baldwin and visiting them there. We went every weekend, almost every weekend, few exceptions. We would have a big meal there. Rose was a very good cook. When I went to live in Berkeley, she had given me her recipe for pot roast, and she was very proud of me because I figured out the one ingredient that was either wrong or missing. I didn't become a good cook myself until I went to live in France, but at home, Mom was a terrible cook. The only thing she could cook was apple stuff. We had 13 apple trees, and she had to get rid of the apples the way people try to get rid of zucchini these days, but the leftovers went into every form of apple dish that you could imagine. I remember apple pies, apple casseroles of some kind, with dough on the top. Those she could make. That was about it. It's a good thing we had household help. Because otherwise the meals would have been just awful. So about Rose and Tack. Rose had asthma, and occasionally, while she was in Baldwin, it must have been so earlier as well, we would find her inside an asthma tent, as they did in those days, and eventually she would be able to come back out. I don't know how that whole thing worked. I was just a child. When Rose developed breast cancer, here's the story that was told. I have no idea what to believe or not. They discovered that part of the bone in her upper arm was missing. You know about this?
No.
No. By sheer willpower, she grew it back. Knowing her and her willpower, I think it's possible. And my mother used to say, she didn't know how she ended up in law school, but it was her mother's doing. That's entirely possible. Though I think there's probably more to the story than that. When Rose developed cancer, which has nothing to do with the arm, it was breast cancer, later in life, she refused treatment. She died at 75. She said she'd had enough for one life, and she was ready to go. I suspect her death was painful, but I don't know that. There was an earlier incident, though, showing similar temperament. She was hard of hearing, or became very hard of hearing, and given all Tack's speech making, which he used to rehearse at home, she eventually said she'd heard enough for one lifetime. she didn't want to improve her hearing. I don't know what was available in those days. I have no idea of the year. When we would go to their house in Baldwin, Rose would have started cooking a dinner, probably pot roast, for which she was famous. She was an amazing cook. And whoever was there for the weekend, for the day, would sit down eventually in the living room or on the porch that fronted on the living room. It was from the porch that you exited to the lawn and not far away at all to the water, the bay, the whatever it was, Long Island Sound. They did build a retaining wall there. There had been one, it wasn't any good for some reason, I don't know. But anyway, they built one. They were on very good terms with their neighbors. One of which was named Eleanor. She lived alone. I don't know whether she was a widow or what. On the other side, there was a family. I don't remember much more about them right now. Okay, Aunt Sonia, who was Rose's sister, acquired by somehow, just down the street, and by somehow has to do with the fact that her husband was lost all his money. So I suspect Rose's father, who was quite wealthy, and I won't go into that now, bought it for Sonia. Anyway, she was right down the street, and living with her was her adult son, Donald, and there were two daughters, twins, I believe, Barbara and Edith, who was known as Pussy. They both married. Donald did not. He lived at home with his mother. I remember thinking as a child that he was rather strange, but Sonia was great. She had a terrific sense of humor and all kinds of interesting things in her house. I didn't remember, but her grandson tells me that there was a grand piano there because she played. I have no recollection of this. But she was, it took 5 minutes to walk from my grandparents' house to hers, if five. And so she was sometimes present at their house, but more often not, and I don't know why not. In any case, if she was present, she would be at the dinner table too. My grandparents became so popular that my high school friends used to drive out to see them with or without me. Well, they were just, I don't know what to say. When I was a child, for both Brother and me, though I can't think that Brother actually did this, we were required by TAC to have something to perform every time we went to visit. My parents took us to see almost all of the acceptable, put it that way, Broadway plays
most of which were musicals. And I recited a lot of plays. Later won in high school, won awards for dramatics and participated in a festival at, I think, Adelphi, where I was awarded a prize. And but mostly sang. Tack could not carry a tune, neither could Mom. I don't know if Rose could, but in those days, I couldn't either. So what the singing sounded like, I don't know. But I do know that when I was in seventh grade, I decided to teach myself to sing on tune and succeeded, because when I was at Smith College, I was in several of the choirs and became an officer of one. That's a pretty neat trick to teach yourself to sing on tune. In any case, my usual was to sing, perform some song. Acting, reciting, singing, dancing. I did dancing too, because I had, after all, 13 years of ballet, though it continued after this period, I think. Acting and performing were part of that side of the family. David has told me that Sissy moved to California to get away from her parents. But she certainly adopted the performing instinct of the family. And in the, I think, 1939 or 38, whatever, World's Fair held in New York, I think in the area that's now the stadium for the Mets, she played the person who introduced and spoke about a robot. And I believe I have a picture, a photograph of that, and it's probably in my ones that are on the computer. I don't know if I have Sissy with the robot, but there's no question that she did that, and David knows about that. Sissy was friends with a famous actress who arranged for her to have roles, supporting roles. It seems clear to me that she was not destined to be a star, probably because she lacked the talent, who knows what. But anyway, she got to go on tour with this woman and eventually moved to California when the woman did. And the woman starred in a number of movies, and Sissy got a lot of roles out of being with her. And if you can see really old westerns, you'll find that Sissy was over and over again cast as the gun moll. You know what that means? That means she accompanied the gang, the bad guys.
Okay.
And whether she was required to shoot, I would assume so, but she certainly had the weapons. David can tell you more about that. After Rose's death and Tack's arthritis, which I have inherited as most, and Mom did, and most members of both sides of the family did. Osteoarthritis truly crippled him. I remember while he was still in Baldwin that he was walking with a cane. I don't remember his being bent over. My family, Mark and the children and I with my au pair girl, eventually moved back to California, which is what we had intended to do in returning to the United States, which I didn't want to do, but anyway, that's another story. Mom brought Tack to California in order to take care of him. They had always fought all the time, verbal fights. Maybe screaming at each other, I have no idea. By then, he was dependent on her and became increasingly unable to take care of himself. Increasingly blind, not, I think, deaf. In any case, she had him originally in her apartment in Marina del Rey and eventually couldn't take it anymore, put him into what was considered a very nice retirement home. I'm sure she paid for it, or maybe he still had the assets, I have no idea. He had a helper named Bob, whom he adored, and who seemed to adore him. When I visited the retirement home, I was appalled. I thought it was dirty and the meals were terrible and all the rest. By then, Tack was old enough, and he must have been in his 90s, but I had to have been at the retirement home before then. I just don't know the dates. And eventually he died there. But I do remember that I got my doctorate in February 1980, though the ceremony was not held until May. And I have my doctoral thesis here. You can read it if you want, but I don't think you want to. Tack was the only one in the family who understood what I was doing. It was groundbreaking research, and Tack got it. Nobody else did. That's pretty interesting. He must have been able to hear in those days. I believe he was 94. I don't know whether he died that year or later. Certainly you could find out from the California records, or it's probably online. Rose was buried in what I think was a Rosenblatt family plot in Long Island. And Tack, after his death, was brought back to New York and buried there. I attended somebody's funeral. Rose's, Tax, somebody else entirely. I don't know. I just remember being there. I do remember being at the burial, at Tack's burial, in that same, next to Rose, in that same cemetery. I think the only other interesting thing I can tell you from that era of the family is that Uncle I, incredibly wealthy, and Tat, both left money to Mom, but by then she was married to a successful lawyer, and they left more to Sissy than to Mom, assuming that Sissy would remain single. Well, Mom was the one who ended up needing the money after my father. Well, anyway, that's a different story. But anyway, she didn't have money from my father, and she was able, she got her remaining assets because Uncle I left her a bequest. Not that much, I think, but I don't really know. And that's, I think, all I can remember of that era. Does that give you information you wanted?